The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. Today is today is Friday, 16th of July, 2010, and this is episode 236. My name is Jules Cisek. I'm here with Jim Race. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, Jules?
Good.
Excellent. Excellent. Hey, you know, before we even dive into all of this, and it's going to be a pretty fun show, I'm sure, I do want to put a big thanks and shout out to the pair of Davids from Australia, Felix and Justin, for donating through the MotoGPOD Facebook page, which is still continuing to be a hell of a rock and roll show, and it's a lot of fun. The Skype charges lately have been pretty steep, so that really helped, pretty much came close to covering most of it. But anybody that would like to donate through the MotoGPOD Facebook page, feel free to do so, and it will be much appreciated. And currently we are sending out stickers all over the world. You don't even have one yet, do you, Jules?
No, I'm waiting. Well, I guess you can hand them to me in person in Laguna.
I will. And one of the things that's been talked about a lot on there lately is meetups. And I was just on there a few minutes ago. People are looking forward to having the opportunity to get together with us at Laguna Seca, so we'll have to kind of flesh that out. And you and I know
where we will not be meeting. We will not be meeting at the timing tower. that was funny.
I agree. And but on top of that, especially with what today's, you know, it's almost 100 degrees here where I am right now, Fahrenheit, and
yeah, it could be a hot one.
Yeah, it could be a hot race, and so we should try and think of some place that has a little bit of shade.
That would be interesting.
That will be interesting.
Well, we'll have one more show before you're going to do one more show next week, right?
Yeah, but I'm going to do it with you, I think, or somebody, and we'll probably do it a little bit early because both of you and I are heading down too.
Yep.
To Laguna Seca, so. And I've kind of got this really cool plan in place, and I'll tell you guys all about it after it happens, because as much as, Jules, you know I like giving previews of things, I don't want to jinx my own plans. I had a very off-the-cuff, impromptu, out-of-the-blue-sky talk with James Whittam today. I'm getting better at that, I think. All the Brit fans have, like, been beating me about the head with a 2x4 or whatever that is in centimeters, but that we'll share with you for this week's show, and there's something pretty cool coming up, and I'll just leave it at that.
Nice. Do you want to, why don't you just run the James thing first, because we're going to, and then we'll talk about old superbikes and then all the MotoGP.
Okay. Totally cool. Yeah, because there's a little bit of interesting things going on in the MotoGP front, isn't there, James?
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, let's rock and roll, and we will play James for you and be back shortly. Let's talk just a little bit about Brno, because I watched your guys' broadcast of that race, and race one, the battle with Max and Chaus was kind of epic in those first few laps.
Yeah, it was. It was good to see Chaus actually leading the race and being, you know, a proper player for BMW, because he's been kind of in the background a little bit for him. You know, with Corsa getting stronger with each kind of meeting, Zalf has been a little bit, not sidelined, but, you know, you just kind of forget about him a bit. Plus, this is the circuit, Brno's the circuit. He had a massive crash last year and broke his leg quite badly. So it was quite good to see Zalf back on something like a little bit of form, although obviously, he fell off eventually. Expecting to fall off when he's gone well, Zalf. But he's a popular bloke, and he's a nice bloke, and he wears his hat on his sleeve a little bit, and he tries hard, so, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. And I have been kind of wondering, as the season's gone on, why the BMWs tend to fade towards the end, but I know that after talking to a fair amount of people that it's usually tire wear and something that they're getting closer on. And we know that Troy, last year, led both races for a decent period of time. And so, you know, we were kind of lucky to see Troy up there this year, and then him getting concussed and, you know, not even knowing where he was kind of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have that many crashes, doesn't Troy? He's got to the stage in his career now where he can actually tell when he, you know, he's got that kind of he can ride fast without, you know, pushing too far over the limit, really. And he doesn't, we're not used to seeing him crash. He had a big crash, doesn't really know why. Fair sort of hard side, but I mean, the last couple of meetings, last three meetings, Troy's been a bit of a revelation. And he's a funny guy, Troy. You know, he's one of them types of rider that if everything's right and he thinks there's a chance of a result, he is capable of pushing and coping with tyre wear and all that. You just sometimes wonder if things aren't just right, whether he's putting as much effort in as what a 25-year-old rider would be in the same position. But that said, that's probably one of the reasons he doesn't fall off a lot.
Yeah, very true. And it's amazing that this is coming from both of you and I talking as a couple of old guys. Although if you do 150 laps at Cadwell,
I'm stiff. I'm a bit in my back today. Yeah. Bad from it, but go on, I can still do it.
I'm not sure if I could at this point. I've got a track here that's well, it's not similar to Cadwell. It's got something called the Cyclone, which is almost like the mountain. Next time you get out to California, you'll have to come ride Thunderhill, man. You'd love it.
Yeah, I would.
And then Super Sport race, gutted for Eugene, man.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you're not used to seeing that bike break down. I don't know whether you know the team.
Yeah, I do. I do, and I talked to Mark Woodage right after the race through email, and I said, you know, give me some insight. And is what he said. So this is something for you, and I guess for the fans as well, is that they lost a big end, and they're pretty sure they scratched that up to Saturday's crash, and the bike ran on its side, and they unfortunately did not have the opportunity, the time, nor the idea to swap that engine out.
That's it. Well, that's the thing. If it's on its side, it's obviously picked some air up and it's run a bit dry on its side. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I remember back in the day, we ran Suzuki's where if you did a wheelie long even about, you know, 50 metres,
yep.
the thing picked air up and it took very, very little to run a big end. And that's obviously what it was, and we're so not used to seeing that. That's such a professional team. I cannot tell you what a good team that is. I mean, they build bikes for other people now, and they are known for, you know, ultra reliability. They're brilliant. I know we had some. I was working at the TT for. You might have seen some of the footage for ITV4.
Yep.
And we watched a lot of onboard stuff, and it was Guy Martin who ran one of their bikes, a Super Sport Honda.
He ran two of their bikes. He ran.
But the onboard stuff I saw, the thing's flat out and it's fast. I mean, it was tramping past everything on the long straight. And it's revving and it's revving and it's revving. Never missed a beat all the time. Now, imagine the miles and the stick they're getting over there. Never missed a beat. They had such a good and professional team. It's unusual that. But you know, see it breaking down. So, you know, it was a bit unusual. And I do feel sorry for him because he hasn't had the best season. And Eugene's such a good little rider. You know, he's of all the super sport riders and most people in superbike as well, he's the cleverest. He's a clever little rider. He's good. He thinks about what he's doing, don't get upset, and he knows what he can do and what he can't do normally. And it's fun looking to see him. He should be leading the championship. I mean, he isn't. But anyway, he's starting to do it.
Yeah. I told Mark in email, I said, you guys need to just kind of put this behind you and come back. Somebody's got to put the stick to Keenan because he did a whole lot of argy-bargy stuff at the end of that race.
Yeah, and do you know what it is? I can't say dirty rider. He's not. He's a good rider. He's a fast lad, and he wants to win, and you can't knock a man for trying. But I tell you what, he's there's not a lot of kind of thought for other people doing what he does. He's not bothered about making friends in paddock, and if he makes a few enemies, he's not bothered. And that's not the way I, you know, race, and it's not the way I like to see other people race. You know, they're all the same boat, and, you know, we all like to win, but I don't know with him. He's almost prepared to overstep the flipping line in the sand, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it used to be that he used to complain that he didn't like to race that way, But then about a year and a half ago, or maybe, well, I guess it was kind of at Miller last year, he kind of changed his tune.
Yeah, he did. He used to complain about everything. And then the next minute, he's flipping, putting moves on people. I remember in at Miller Motor Park last year with, it was Cal and Eugene. He was flipping out of order, you know. And, and you know, there's a difference between, you know, wanting to win and being a hard rider to be just that little bit kind of, you know, I mean, you've got to live with these guys, every weekend. You know, the paddock, for me, were full of mates and like minds. And I don't think it is for him. I don't think he's that bothered about, you know, making enemies, which, if that's the way you want to run, well, that's, you know, that's, I guess it's fine, but it's not the way I, you know.
And that brings to mind and something that we may have, and this is on the record, it's a possibility that we may have, speaking of making enemies, you and Foggy on the show sometime very soon.
That's fine by me. I mean, yeah, making enemies. It's a funny thing. You know, like, I went all through my career with Cal. We started at the same time, although we didn't know each other. We both started racing in 1983. We didn't know each other at the beginning. We're the same age, near as damn it. And his career paths were pretty similar. And obviously we got to know each other, both northerners, both a bit kind of, what's the word? I mean, it's kind of plain speaking with a bit of English way of saying it.
Yeah.
Don't know what the American kind of phrase is, but I mean, you speak your mind and... no, I am. I'm just... Oh, 2 minutes.
Okay.
That's all right, otherwise. We're off to the Great Yorkshire Show tomorrow. It's like an agricultural show. You know, where you look at pigs, the prettiest pig and the thing, you know, nicest sheep and all that. So we're getting ready for that. But yeah, so me and Cal went pretty much through his career together and became big mates. But now we're still good mates. And we still do a bit of trail biking and, you know, we still see each other's families regularly. We have a meal occasionally. But it's like, you know, the old mate from Muppet Show, who was stood in the little box there.
Yep.
We're like them. We're always complaining about most things and arguing with each other. I have a nice relationship with him now because he has settled down a lot. But the thing about him is he has an opinion and he's not afraid to kind of... He's not full of shit. He's just plain speaking. And he will tell people. And one of the reasons he doesn't come to a lot of race meetings now because there's a lot of, what's the word? Nowadays, there's a lot more kind of...
commercial offering.
It's a lot more bullshit than what they ever used to be. Everybody's got an articulated wagon, even though they've only got two bikes and a trouble box.
Yeah.
Isn't it? They've all got hospitality, and they all speak PR speak all the time, and he struggles with that a little bit, you know, like... He gets lads sort of talking to him, wanting advice, and he struggles to be not honest. You know, he just says, you know, we'll win a few races and then come and talk to me. You know, he doesn't try that hard with him. He's a bit too plain speaking, really, to to spend the time.
I think what the term that you might be looking for is politically correct, and frankly, I refuse to be that.
Yeah, and he speaks his mind, and he's not. He's a funny lad, you know. We've had him on. We managed to talk him into going on Eurosport a couple of times this year as a studio pundit, and he has got. He's not academic at all, but he has got a bit of an insight into it, and he comes out with stuff that you think, oh my God, why didn't I think of that? But he does see things. He's not an idiot. He's a clever lad. He just chooses not to be kind of clever in a kind of academic, you know, studious way. But he is a bit, he's fairly canny, would be the word.
You know, I was waiting all weekend all Sunday for you to correct Jack. And I know that you're kind of reticent sometimes to do so, but he kept saying over and over again that Fabrizio's been on the podium here for the last six times he's been there. And last year in race one, when he took Spies out, he was definitely not on the podium.
No, he hasn't. Exactly said, he has been up. Jack had all the stats dead right, but what we're saying was he does like the place. But last year, that was, I think the Spies thing was, that's the most animated and annoyed, really, we saw Spies all year, because it was a bit of a brutal move, that was, from Fabrizio. strangely enough, a couple of years before that, when he was on a DFX Honda, I think, he did exactly the same thing on Harder and Maddie Corsa. Mm. But he pulled a really, really tough move, and they were both complaining about him. But having said that, he at the time was a young lad, and at the time he hit speed last year, you'd expect a bit more kind of professional about, you know, a bit more of a professional approach. But, you know yourself, it happens. You know, he wants to win.
Yeah, I mean,
gone and all that.
Yeah, he got pissed off is what happened.
He was upset, I've got to say. But he handled himself quite well, the speech. He doesn't, you know, we saw a couple of times last year when he could have, you know, spat the dummy a bit and thrown his teddy out, but he didn't. He's quite professional, and he, you know, I think a lot of what we saw last year from Speed is this kind of speed effect. Everybody thought that Yamaha was so good, and I get the impression that he won on pretty much anything. He was good enough to do the business on pretty much any of them top bikes. He was, you know, he was a bit special last year. Yeah. And it, you know, you're getting like Torsland now kind of sort of live up to it, and he just, you know, he's struggling a little bit with it. And we know James is good. He's a tryer. He works hard. He never gives up. But he just, you know, the bike isn't, you know, head and shoulders above everything else. The best bike, and Speed's made it look like it was last year.
Yeah, no doubt. And we kind of saw an example of that, however, when you get the right person on it, with Rossi doing testing on Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
how did he go on with it? I haven't heard.
He was .2 off of Cal's fastest race lap on a soft.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, there's another one, though. Cal is, he'll shock a few, will Cal. Once Cal, he's struggling with tyre longevity and various aspects of how the bike feels. You get front end kind of oddball feeling sometimes. He's not confident with certain aspects. But when things are right, Cal's a fast, fast man. There's no question of that. I mean, he can ride a bike. It's a matter of giving him the grip he needs and things that will sort of work for him. But when things are right, Cal's rapid.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, there was part of me that earlier this year was kind of wishing that he'd gone to Moto2, but now that I see that Axe Murderer class, and it truly is, I'm glad he's
good in it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun, but you know, there's part of me that is like, you're just waiting for a catastrophe to happen every time I watch one of those races.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, the thing is about MotoGP though, for me, it needs. There's no Rossi now, which whatever you say, he was a big part of the attraction for MotoGP for a lot of people, me included. And the Moto2, the fact that it's so flipping exciting, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of crashes and incidents. That is, it's keeping the thing going for me, is that.
Yeah, well, you probably don't know this then. Rossi's caravan is already on the way to Sachsenring.
Do what?
Rossi's caravan and gear is already on the way to Sachsenring.
Excellent. I tell you what, 32... It was 32 days, a compound tib and fib, and it was 32 days out the saddle.
It's nuts.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I've done tib and fib, not compound. And I think I heal fairly well, and I want to get better. I don't want to sit at home and get a doctor to sign me sick notes. You know, I want it to get out of my bed and get going. And 1 month doesn't even fucking bear thinking about. I mean, people could crack the, you know, the tib or the fib and not the displaced. And you can understand they can ride in a couple of 3 weeks. But a compound fracture,
yep.
Two broken bones, no strength left in it at all. It's a good guy, is that?
Yeah, it's kind of what everybody wants to see. I'm not much of a Rossi Muppet by any means, but it would be nice to have him come back. And, you know, and if he doesn't run at the exact front, it would be really fun to see him dice with the guys, you know, in upper mid-pack.
Yeah, but I tell you what, you know, that's a funny thing. I remember, you know, when I went to, I can't remember, I think when I went to Supersport, I didn't qualify so well. I don't know why. I couldn't run the Supersport qualifying tyres as well as I could run the slick qualifiers. And I typically, although I always ran up front, I typically qualified lower than what I had done in Superbike the previous year. And the funny thing is, you know, when you get racing with somebody who you've never raced with and you don't know, and you don't know what they're going to do. It's flipping strange, is that? It really is. Because you get used to racing with the people that are of your ability and going around the same pace. And you kind of know what, you see them every week, and you get to trust each other or not, as the case may be. But you know when you get, you're dashing for 15 feet, flipping out sometimes.
Yeah, no doubt. We kind of went into this weekend looking at you know, Max as being the top dog on the Priller. Didn't completely work out that way, but certainly had, you know, a fair amount of that stuff up front. But I do need to ask you, and I'll let you go after this because I just rang you out of the blue. Nori, what do you think? I think he's got his head kind of back into it, but I'm not sure if he's there yet.
A little bit. I mean, the thing about Nori, you can't... the man is unbelievably honest. He'll tell you what he thinks is wrong. He'll say, you know, he did a big interview for them saying, I've got the fear. He said, I'm scared of my bike, scared of leaning over, scared of crashing. And I've never heard a top rider say that. Never.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to be working through it a bit. I mean, if he were 25, I'd say he's probably on the way back to something like he's, you know, he can recover.
Yeah.
I'm not sure now. I really aren't sure. You got people like, not Max. I mean, Max, we know how good Max is, and the bike's come of age, and he's fighting on it. But people like Johnny Ray and Cal, and there's lots of young lads in there now that are going to make it not that easy for Norrie. You know, even at his best, would have had a race on his hands. Now, I'm just wondering how much fight he's left in him. And I'm saying that hoping that he can do it. I mean, there's nothing I would love to see more than the old war horse coming, you know, getting back to something like, but I don't know that I can see it anymore. Yeah. I really don't.
Yeah, I went into the same thing, and I talked to him a fair amount at Miller. I will be at Laguna Seca in a couple of weeks, so maybe I'll talk to you and give you some insight from the ground there, because I know you guys don't do that flyaway.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. But I'm also wondering a bit about Leon. What's going on there, man?
What's going on with who?
With Leon Haslam.
Oh, Leon. He's got this... I mean, I speak to Leon a lot because I'm a good mate. We're good trialing together, and I like him. He's a good kid. He really is a good kid. He's not interested in Porsches or blooming flash motorhomes. He just wants his motorbikes and his toys. He likes his mini motor shows. He's got a little microlight airplane he flies about, and he's a good kid. And he's got problems in that he just isn't getting the feel that wants. He was saying he flowed the chapter, get the chapter sorted, and I'm back, I'm all right again. But then it changes then. Oh, it might be a bit too much weight on the front end, and it might be this, and it might be that. And he's searching for something. There's certainly something lacking. The guy's a fast man, and he isn't a mug, and if things are like he wants it, he can run up front. I know he can, but he doesn't seem to be able to get what he wants, and he started thinking he don't really know what it is that's wrong now. So, I don't know. I mean, I was hoping that Bruno would be, even though it's, you know, BMT's favourite circuit in the world and we knew we were going to be strong, I was just hoping that maybe Liam could run with him a little bit and get a bit of his sort of mojo back, you know, but he struggles. I don't know. I'm hoping that he can get to a circuit that suits him a little bit better. He can get going again.
Yeah, same here. You know, I've talked to him four or five times over this season for the show, and I dropped a note to Ollie, and she didn't get back to me, and I'm like, so...
Yeah, because the thing is, Jim, you know when things are going well, it's dead easy.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of PR stuff's dead easy, everyone wants to talk to you, but it doesn't take much, and he isn't a doom and gloom man at all. He's not given to massive peaks and troughs of emotion, isn't Leon? He likes his bikes and he knows his own ability, and he's, without being cocky, he's a good lad. But when you know yourself, when things aren't going so well, you're like, sure. It's not. It just becomes, he probably didn't want to, you know, come and talk to you and, you know, make it, you know, be a bit down in the mouth. You know, he wants to try and upbeat bloke, and I think he'd probably find it hard a minute. But having said that, I'm sure he'll be back. He's too good not to be.
Absolutely. You know, it for me, some of the best interviews I've done is when people are actually struggling, because some people to actually, you know, work their way through it literally by talking about it. But yeah, I guess I'm kind of an unknown entity. Listen, I've gone way over the 2 minutes that you guaranteed your wife, so I'm going to get you in trouble.
All right, Jim.
All right, cheers, man. And all right, well, of course, as usual, many thanks for James for joining us, and always a pleasure to talk to him, and it's always just so entertaining.
I mean, you know, the best thing about it is that, like, you call him up, and he's like, who is this? And he's like, Jim Race. And within 10 seconds, you guys are talking about the racing. It's just so, so awesome.
Well, you know, we don't do gardening or, you know, go off and you know, share golf tips. We pretty much just call and talk about racing. So it's easy to slip into that.
It's great, though. I love it.
Yep. So the big news, of course, this week. And to
I do want to say one thing that was I should have asked you to ask him beforehand. I wasn't sure you're going to be on a call with him today. But did you watch the Superbike races?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, at one point he says they're talking about Leon Camier on the he's got some lovely looking lady standing next to him and
oh my God, yeah,
at one point they're like, you know, Camier is a little bit like Hopkins on the grid, minus the alcohol.
I know.
Ouch.
Yeah, Jack was actually in true spirit and form this weekend, and they made all sorts of off the cuff comments about Leon as the weekend went on, and
they did.
And I laughed through them all. I don't remember a whole bunch of Super Pole, which I did watch, but the races themselves I've watched once. Didn't watch them here on Stateside TV, but I watched that feed because it's always amusing to listen to those guys, and they usually get a little bit of more insight. So, again, many thanks to James. Yeah, funny.
And evil.
Yes, indeed. VR46, that's about the only news. It's not the only news, but it certainly is a dominating thing right now, and it has been for weeks. And I don't know. Were you surprised that they were testing at Brno? That blew me away. I had no idea.
It came out of the blue, I think. They kind of said, hey, you know, Yamaha probably just said, like, hey, listen, you know, we've got the bike here. You want to come out and ride? I don't know. Or he probably called up and was like, hey, can I ride?
Yeah.
You know, he did the test at Misano, obviously. It was kind of a specially prepared bike. It was Cal Crutchlow's bike, but they run Bridgestones on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this time, they actually really just basically had the setup that James Toseland started with. That's what they started with. And, you know, the Pirellis, basically the entire World Superbike setup. It's kind of interesting it's the first time we've had a crossover like this in a long time. And it's kind of interesting that it was allowed by, you know, the Fleminis and stuff, because Rossi went out there and tore it up.
Yeah, but if you think about it, Jules, that gives World Superbike a huge leg up, because everybody talks about, you know, the sterile guarded team, and there's no such thing as bad publicity, especially when you're talking about Valentino Rossi, because you're talking eyeballs, and everybody was talking about it.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, he went out there. He did 46 laps. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't. The last time when he was at Misano, they published that he did 10 and then 14. This time they didn't say how many he did at a time, and he was saying that after a few laps he was already in a bit of pain. So I don't know how long these runs were, but
I was following a fair amount of people through various media sources, and it sounds like he actually did a fairly decently long run for the second stint.
Because I think that was the whole point. He wanted to see if he could do the. Because last time he said, you know, I felt good, but I'm still unsure about race distance.
Exactly. And it, you know, he came very close. But, you know, there's part of me also that I have to wonder about, Jules, is do you think that they're actually. This may be just a complete speculation on my part. And boy, there's been a lot of speculation around the net lately, but isn't that always the way? That maybe that they were trying to do some testing for JT or for that bike itself, using, well, probably one of the best people in the world to do it.
I mean, I'm sure it worked. It's something that you know. I mean, if Stelgar is giving Rossi a ride, they want something back for that too.
Sure.
And so I'm sure they got the some fantastic data.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think JT the first time out on an M1 back in 2007 or 2008, sorry, was like, man, I can't ride Rossi's bike, so it may not give him that much help. But you know, but I'm sure they gained good data because he lapped half a second faster.
Yeah.
Than either James or Cal.
Yeah, and he did in the end, which I think was kind of cool and a little bit of hubris on his or somebody's part, throw on a soft and spank out a really fast lap, which I just found amusing, purely amusing. I'm like, you know, that's just kind of a poke in somebody's eye. Not sure why he's doing it, because he didn't need to do that. You know, he's not trying to qualify. He's not trying to set a fast time, but that they would do that, and it's a bit of the trickster in him, I think.
Totally, totally. I'm sure he was smiling in his helmet, you know?
Yeah.
The hyperbole that was generated, like, prior to, like, when the test was going on and people were saying, well he's Alan Pirelli, he's not Bridgestone's, this is surely a sign that he's going to be in World Superbikes next year. It's not going to be a move to Ducati, and that's why he's going to make an announcement. Whereas, you know, his announcement was really just like, yeah, I'm going to try to race at Sachsenring. You know, there was some unbelievably hilarious speculation. It's just amazing. You know, I'm a Rossi fan, and I'm not ashamed to admit the fact that I really enjoy Valentino Rossi, and I don't like when people say you know, Rossi Muppets and all that kind of stuff, which I know you do actually also, because you're a purist, quote unquote, and. No, seriously. I mean, you like racing no matter what. I think that people have to. I think there's a lot of fans who try to polarize themselves against other fans, and I just don't see the point. It's like, why not just if you're a fan of the sport, enjoy it whichever way you like it. If you like it because of Valentino Rossi, great. If you like it because of pure racing, you want to see, you know, this kind of racing, great. Don't bitch about the other fans, because Valentino Rossi fans are paying for a lot of the sport, you know? A lot of the spectacle is paid for by people who are there just because of...
Yeah, that's very true, and I don't disagree with that at all. And I think I know, actually, you're referring to also another incident that I will keep to myself, but I've seen people do the exact same thing that you're talking about. And to me, the term Muppet isn't necessarily a derogatory term. It's more just like, it's kind of like the term fanboy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. But you are right. I am a fan of pretty much every racer that's out there trying to do it, and I think part of that is because that I actually, at least at my very little punter level, did it myself, and I know just how much effort it takes, even at that tiny level. So for these guys to elevate themselves to such is just incredible to me. So anyway, the word is that Valentino Rossi's gear, team, and everything are heading to Sachsenring for this weekend's race, and that's just outstanding, isn't it?
It is. It is because it's you know, it is a very difficult racetrack to. There's no real resting place on it, but it's also one that. I don't know, that it really has only like one or two places where you really have to battle another rider. So you can, if you can just make it through, you know, all those
mm-hmm.
Left the Omega and then all the crazy stuff uphill and downhill. Once you get through that, then you battle for a quarter lap and then you're back into, you know, just riding mode. So
yeah,
it's actually, you know, if the weather is good. I think if it rains, he should not ride, you know?
It's probably not a bad idea, you know, and you continue to talk, and I'm going to check the weather while you're doing so.
Mm. Okay, and the other thing is that I think he has to get cleared by a medical officer. Now, this is interesting because what medical officer is going to say, no, Valentino Rossi can't ride. And if a doctor says that, then does the doctor have a second opinion, you know?
Yeah.
Do you get
the bottom line?
Imagine if somebody that does clear him and he hurts himself.
Well, true, but I mean, the bottom line is it is the rider's choice, and you will never see whoever it might be it Doc Koster or somebody else, turn a rider away from the track if they want to ride and they're not concussed.
That's right.
If they can patch them up below the head, it's game on. So
yeah, it's up to the rider at that point.
Okay, so you're not going to like this. Guess what? The weather should be in fact, the weather is much like it was last year. Who knew? Friday, light rain showers. Saturday, heavy rain. You remember the QP there last year?
Oh my God!
The Nikki yes. into Espargaro launch.
Yep.
And Sunday, light rain. So, wow.
That might figure into a change of plans.
May well, but on top of that, it's supposed to be warm. Wow, you've got heavy rain on Saturday and 28 degrees Celsius, which is what 80 something. I'm gonna have to think.
Wow.
I think I'm think about this for a moment.
That's typical European summer, actually.
Well, it is, but at least maybe UK stuff.
Thunderstorms.
yeah. And well,
how appropriate, you know?
Light rain on Sunday actually throws a real twist into the mix because what do you actually plan for? Light rain could mean dry to anything, and it's always that guessing game that teams just hate.
Yeah. We've never had a flag to flag race at a track like this before. That would be also very interesting.
It will. I mean, Sachsenring's actually come up with some great. I mean, last year's race there was fantastic. It was really fun to watch.
All the way to the very last lap. Yeah.
And in a way, that
we got all the aliens are good at this track.
Well, not only that, but Depunier as well.
Right. Pugnier is good, and we'll see how Spies does. He's been very surprising, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to this one. Whether Rossi races or not, I think it might actually be a good race regardless.
Yeah, are there any races we're not looking forward to, Jules?
Well, I mean, of course not. Of course, there's none, but after the fact.
True.
Catalunya looks kind of boring, and after the fact, Silverstone looked kind of boring, you know. So
that's true. That's very true. And okay, the races that we don't look forward to are ones that end up being processional. And
yeah, and the thing is that I just feel like this track. I really thought Catalunya was going to be a close one between Danny and Lorenzo, and I think it could have been if it wasn't for that first corner issue with the brakes that Danny had.
No doubt. All right, you want to talk about Brno a bit?
Before we do that, let's talk about Moto2 because that's another series that I think there's a little bit of it's another series that's actually hasn't been delivering really the goods like we were hoping, except it's covered up by the fact that it's you call it the Axe Murderer class. It's covered. The race results are covered by incredible incidents that happened in the race. But if you think about it, there were only two races that were close races at the front. Everything else has been a runaway.
That's true.
And what the hell is my point? My point is that there's we're entering a dangerous zone where we're actually looking forward to the Moto2 race because at Catalunya at the first corner we had 9 riders down and we had a bike on fire later and then. You know, I mean, that's not the kind of thing that I want to be looking forward to make a race exciting. I really want to see another Jerez or another Silverstone. Those were the Moto2 rounds that were heart attack. You know, at the end you're like, oh wow, I haven't taken a breath for 40 minutes.
You know, it was funny when I was at Miller Motorsports Park I heard this conversation going on behind me, and I turned around. It was Kevin Cameron. He was talking to another journalist. And I was just listening because I greatly respect Kevin, and I eventually kind of inserted myself into the conversation. Imagine that. And we talked about Moto2 a little bit, and those of you, at least in the States, know Kevin, know of Kevin, and those of you who don't, you can look him up on the net. He's been a long, long time journalist, editor, I believe, of Motorcyclist magazine for many years. He wrote Top Dead Center, Top Dead Center 2. He's very respected, and he's been in the GP paddock and paddocks all over the world. And we started talking about Moto2. And the general impression that I got from him was it was kind of a NASCARization of...
I didn't want to go there, but that's exactly what I was thinking, too.
Yeah, but only from the crashes standpoint, not from the manufactured winner standpoint, which is going to get us some people that like NASCAR. They're going to send us hate mail. I don't know if we have any of those people listening. But
not anymore, Jim. The last two have just left the building.
I don't think that was the intent, Jules, but I think that's how it's come out. Because we've got such a diverse and rich amount of people that are in it, and because the grids are so full.
Yeah, yeah, and the thing is that the runaways is what really kind of puzzles me, because at Catalunya we had two. Because if you think about it, Ian only got away. Then he had to do his ride-through because he failed to see the really clear signals that they were giving him. And I'm being very sarcastic, because I have no idea how the racer who was supposed to figure out what the fuck the little down arrow means. And didn't they end up using like a piece of paper at one point? I mean, it was crazy. Anyway.
Yeah, I think they threw out like one of those hooks you see people pull comedians off stage with.
Exactly. Anyway, and then he had to do his ride through, and then Takahashi had a runaway. So we witnessed two runaways in one race, you know?
But you know, we see that all the time in 125s as well. And
Not quite
like that, but you'll still see packs break off, and I think a lot of it has to do with aero, and a lot of people are still trying to figure out aero in Moto2, and I don't think that. I know that for a fact because I've talked to some people, and...
aero and suspension, because there's some of those bikes are clearly better than now.
Yeah.
After six or seven rounds of development, they're really... figuring this stuff out.
No doubt. And so I...
Like Uthi, for example. That team has that thing wired. If he wasn't hurt, he would be winning races left and right.
Well, and I think a big part of it, too, is that people are still experimenting, and you've probably got a fair amount of teams that are actually running a different chassis every week, maybe adapted to what they think that particular circuit is going to be able to take care of. Remember, these guys only got one bike. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, if something happens, then that can throw things into the mix. But I don't think we've ever seen, you know, this kind of diversity at the middle level before, or at least lately. And it's not quite the class that I thought it was going to be in. You know, if you and I go back a year, Jules, we were like basically freaking out because 250s were going away. And then we slowly started to warm towards...
Yeah, I remember that. That's right.
Moto2.
Yeah.
And I don't know if my feeling right now is the same that I actually had prior to the season starting. I don't know if that's because I know more about it or that I haven't necessarily really liked the way that it's going. But, you know, I haven't really formed a solid opinion on it. I think I'm just going to have to wait until the end of the year and kind of gain and gather my judgment. And I just have this feeling still that they're going to take a big old weed cutter to the rules at the end of the year and do a bunch of modification. I know they're going to. I mean, we already know that they're going to reduce the size of the grid.
Yep.
And so...
Let's just hope they keep it simple like that, though. It doesn't become some kind of craziness.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I know,
but again, you know, now we're entering a race where at least the straight before the first corner is a little shorter, so it's not going to be as insane. But I'm going to have my eyes closed. I know I'm going to have my eyes closed when this race starts.
There are still plenty of places for crazy and insane things to happen at Sachsenring. Or, you know what? We actually have to say it the right way. Do you want to take a stab at it?
Oh, yeah. Der Sachsenring.
That's for you, Bob. Yeah. Mr. Bob, now. did you hear us announce that last week on the show?
Yes. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, great stuff.
Once again, hopefully, Bob, in your, third week of marriage, you're quite happy still, and St. Peter Teresa. And hopefully you'll listen, you'll hear this before it's like 2012 or something like that. That's about all.
So I was going to just say the last thing about the Moto 2 thing is that, you know, Ian Oning is a very hot-headed kid, right?
Really? And
Jim, seriously, he is. just in case you didn't know. and you know, and I'm sure he's going to feel like the Catalunya race was just so unfairly taken away from him. And so I'm scared about what's going to happen at Sachsenring.
Well, I mean, if you want to get to the front, you have to get to the front quick in this class, because there's no way that you can do it after the fact. I don't know.
You know, what's going to be interesting is to see what they look like when they're going down the hill in the back, just the two corners from the end. That's going to be very interesting. I mean, I would love to see it in real life.
I wonder if there's
on the first lap. Oh,
yeah. I wonder if there's odds makers overseas that are actually doing like a book on how many bikes will finish. Bad Jim. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Hey, do you know what I actually learned the other day? Maybe you know this already. I didn't. Remember the old theme song for MotoGP.com? Or the MotoGP...
the Boots one?
Yeah.
Are you ready, Boots?
I didn't know what Are You Ready, Boots was referring to until, like, yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Now, we talked about it because I actually had... I don't know, there may be some listeners who remember this, but I actually did a version of the intro music where at the end...
Oh, I had remember that, yeah.
Yeah, where we changed it to Are You Ready, Bob?
Yeah. But I didn't know that was Rossi's little bend-over deal looking down at his boots. I had no idea. And for whatever reason, yesterday I was trying to get some stats or something, and I was on Valet's Wikipedia site, and I read that, and I'm like, oh, really? Huh. So just goes to show, you know, people out there think that we know everything. Hell no. Trust us. We make most of this up as we go along.
Okay. So we had the Max Biaggi round, his favorite racetrack.
So we thought, but
we were quite surprised. That first race was, both races really didn't give us that much like cheering kind of racing. But it was, you know, Jonathan Rea in that first race found something really special and was untouchable.
No doubt.
His riding style is so cool on that track because that track is so wide, so he can really hang it out. And he was, you know, he's starting to remind me a little bit of Gary McQuaid. He's not as sideways as McQuaid. I don't think anybody ever will be, but in the way that everybody who's looking at it, all the races are saying, there's no way that he can make lap times better than somebody like Biaggi, who's riding a really, you know, knife edge kind of ride, very, very high corner speeds and, you know, the kind of 250 style. And Jonathan Rea is taking like a different line, and he's taking the longest way around the track and spinning up the wheel, and yet, you know, his lap times were incredible.
Yeah. I think back to the beginning of last year when a lot of people were like, it might be something, you know. I think a lot of people had, like, bad cube remembrances. And there's no doubt that bike and the team have been coming to the fore. But at the same time, Tenkata, on that side of the fence, has actually seemed to make a big step up, frankly, both in Superbike and Supersport. And you know, Johnny was actually kind of sliding down to the field mid-season, much as Leon Haslam has been, and which means that he needs to come back on the show so we can start winning races again.
That's right. Did he win his race, like, immediately after he talked to you?
Yeah, and he stuck to it for a while, but he hasn't been back on in a while. Martin, I kind of joke about that, but it is a little strange, you know. Either I can pick winners of people to talk to, or winners like to talk. It's probably the latter, frankly. And as I said to James in the prior interview, that little mini battle that was had with Chaus and Biaggi, and who else was there? Was it Crutchlow, I think, for a bit? But
Macheca?
I can't remember who was in that mix, man, but it was fun. It was back and forth. It was only like two or three laps into the race, race one, and that was fun to watch. I really, really enjoyed that.
And, of course, Biaggi did his classic pass and go wide, pass and go wide, and pass and go wide, but eventually he made it stick.
Yeah. I mean, if you watched last year, you could see him do the exact same thing, but he eventually made it stick, with the exception of getting on the tail end of Ben and not being able to take care of that in a race too. But, you know, some of the players that we remember from last year didn't actually feature this year. Fabrizio is a classic example.
Right. Actually, it's supposed to be a good Ducati track.
Yeah.
And the Ducatis weren't doing so well, although at the beginning of practice it looked like Haga was back because he was on top of the timesheets and after free practice, and I was really like so psyched because you and James talked about this.
Yeah.
Like, he's one guy who we can sort of see him coming back, but he's not a young spring chicken. He may be done. He may be done. It's just so sad.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too was we have to remember this weekend because he actually did fairly well.
He just had a terrible time during Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, and he crashed twice prior to racing, and, you know, that sucks. And both times they were front-end crashes, and the problem that, you know, I didn't quite believe that MCN interview, but I've heard enough corroboration at this point that I actually think that that is actually how Haga feels. And it was, I think that interview was right after Miller.
This is when he said that when he got torpedoed by Zaus, he kind of lost...
Well, yeah, he said he was scared.
He got scared, yeah.
And,
you know, I kind of buy it because for one thing, Norrie's always been an unbelievably honest guy, you know, to the point where, like, I think his team is, you know. I don't know, there was a couple of times where you see him, he used to be just kind of focused on the grid, where he just kind of looked, he kind of looked like a, like deer in headlights kind of look on his face.
I don't know if it's deer in the headlights, but just amazingly distracted.
Distracted, okay. Yeah, that's probably better.
Yeah. Cal Crutchlow is deer in the headlights.
That's true. Yeah, but he still rides well, so.
Oh, yeah, it's like a venomous deer in the headlights. Deer in the headlights isn't going to move.
Exactly. Swerve.
But, yeah, race one was fun. It kind of, you know, chilled out a little bit near the end of it, and... We had a fair amount of people that went out. Fabrizio, Scassa, new on the it wasn't Scassa. It was a new. It was Schmertz.
Schmertz,
Aprilia, and he went down as well. Leon Kemier was out. Vermeulen and Max Neukirchner, and that all kind of happened. What, on lap one, turn one, didn't it?
The Neukirchner crash.
Yeah,
because he crash here last year as well.
I don't think he crashed there last year, but there was no doubt that Vermeulen didn't need to go down again.
And, that's right.
Well, it's not even anything to chuckle about at this point because he's done for the season. And
is he really?
Yeah, and that kind of injury and his record over the past few years does not bode well for a return to a competitive team, and he wasn't really on one in the first place. And the question is, can he retain his spot on that team and still come back if Kawasaki, and that's a big if, actually puts together a decent effort for next year? There's all this talk about how they're putting together a new bike for 2011, and it's going to be this and that, but it's not cross-plane crank, but they've done so-and-so. And I've seen some pictures, some spy photos and all that kind of crap. But and I dearly, you know me, I dearly love to see Kawi come back and come and be a force. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. But it's a real bad break for Chris. It just aggravated the knee that he hurt at, not Miller, but it was Kyalami? No, where was it? It was still UK? Donington? I don't know. A race that he got basically punted into a tire wall, and his bike chased him in and gave him a right pounding. So,
right. I remember that. I just have no idea when that was.
I know it was this year. Yeah. Race two doesn't stand out in my mind.
No, because you know, Biaggi got away and, sure. and stayed up front. The only thing I remember was that Tosin was mm-hmm. very well cut through the field. I think he was down at like 10th at one point, and he just cut through people. He did some really nice dicing with Haga.
Yeah. You know what my idea is? I think I know what happened there. I think Rossi was actually in disguise, came over and touched his bike between races. Like this glow came over it, and then he just went out and went fast. That's what happened.
There you go. Maybe you should go and help out Leon. There's that rumor.
I know.
That's an interesting one. Let's just finish this up first. So the funniest thing actually was at the very end when, and this is again a shout out to James Whittam and Jack, about when Fabrizio goes up to talk to the press after the for the interviews, and he starts speaking Italian. They're like, "Oh, come on, just you know how to talk English."
Well, which is funny because when I was at Miller, he totally knows how to speak English.
Yeah, I know.
And trust me, I had a few beverages with the gentleman, and he's a funny guy, Jules. We'll have to make sure that we get you to the next World Superbike race because Michelle is very, very amusing and a bit of a brat. I will say that.
Well, that's obvious.
Yeah. That was cool. And no doubt Tosin actually coming up that quick. We did have some other guy, you know, Schmertz out back again. That was a drag for his home country out in both races.
Yeah. I mean, he just on a new bike. So I really question being at your home round and be on a new ride because he basically jumped on a bike for the first time at free practice, right? I don't think he even had a chance to do anything prior to that.
I'm not sure how much testing he did, but we had, what, 6 or 7 guys out in the first race. We had another 5 out in the second race, including Chaus. We didn't mention Corser, which is a real drag. I didn't mention the call. And some of the commentary I actually heard about it was amusing in a medically induced coma sort of way. He really was out of his senses, but it was clear when they were showing the races, especially during race two, he was there at the track and he was at the side and he was enjoying himself, but he just wasn't.
Look at the pretty airplanes.
Yeah. Shiny. We did have the opportunity this weekend to actually see a little bit of Roger Hayden, and on that same front, I'm not sure how much of this you know, Morawaki is putting together an effort for him for the Indy MotoGP round to run a Moto2.
Oh, yeah. No, and he's got the bike that Judy made.
Yeah, and in fact, as we speak, he is actually down testing in Southern California, a new track called Chuckwalla, brand new track this year, and so that's pretty cool. And the bike actually looks really neat, and I think it should be a good effort, even if it is a very strange conglomeration of stuff. You gotta
really, yeah. Well, what do you mean? Because Kevin Schwantz is a Suzuki guy, and he's on the he's like running a Morawaki team.
Well, yeah, and Roger Hayden is riding a Kawasaki in World Superbike, and he's currently riding a Honda with a Morawaki frame in Moto 2. You have to admit, that's a little bit odd.
All right, fair enough.
But yeah, literally today being today. And so that's pretty cool. I haven't heard any times or anything like that. And unfortunately, that track is so new, it doesn't have a webcam or anything like that. And so we don't have a whole lot of information. But your top five for race two were Biaggi, Ray, Fabrizio, Toseland, and Haga. And your notables out were Smertz, Chaus, Vermeulen, Sykes, and Roy Kirshner. Again, first guy out in both races. That's all suck, isn't it?
Yep.
And in fact, that may not bode too well for next year, and we'll have to see how that goes, you know. I think silly season is going to get really interesting in World Superbike, man. MotoGP has been kind of amusing to this point, almost to the point of distraction, to be honest.
Yeah.
But
it's about to get insane.
I think it is. And you know me, I almost don't like the speculation and stuff. I just kind of like to watch and see where things land. But boy, some people really get into it. I'm like, I read this piece, in fact, you commented on today, that just was kind of looking into the future a little bit too far. It was David, Moto Matters, and the piece about the
rules.
Yeah. And I'm like, dude, that's a stretch. I mean, the rules are not even close to set in stone. I mean, they're set in mud, and the mud's about an inch thick. And
I think the key is to show. I think he's doing a really good job of showing how ridiculous some of these rules are, and then
hoping they'll change them.
Yeah, and all the rules that he talked about last year that would have been ridiculous ended up getting changed. I mean, it's not because of him, of course. I mean, somebody else. Well, maybe somebody did read it over there on his site. It's a very popular website. I like the fact that he's pointing out that, you know, some of these rules, you may look at them and if you glance at them, they look like they make sense. But if you start to really think about the way that teams work, like you look at like the way Le Mans, for example, is run, the 24-hour races, like those rules have to be spelled out so carefully, because if you don't, it's like a, you know, getting a wish from a genie, you know. The genie is going to take advantage of everything. If you just say something just exactly, not quite exactly right, then you're screwed.
You know, and you make a very good point. I would like to, for those of you that listen to this show, and those of you that are casual fans, you know, you just like watching the racing, I would invite you very seriously to go to www.fim.ch and download the rules PDF file for, you know, World Superbike or MotoGP and read through it, because I think you'll be incredibly blown away by the depth and complexity of those rules. It's just amazing. And, you know, for me, Jules, you know, you've made hints this year that you might think about doing something kind of interesting. But for me, going and digging into the rules to try and find, A, what you had to do, but B, what wasn't spelled out and was kind of left a little bit open, was actually a really kind of neat thing. And our rule books were only like 150 pages long. And some of the ones that they have for international racing are just these volumes, and they're incredible. If you consider yourself a real fan, you got to read the rules, because that's where some very interesting stuff comes out.
I totally agree. And you know, at the last race when we had the at Catalunya, when we had the that horrific crash, Carmelo and. Had noise in the back, and a bunch of people, you know, commentators said, you know, he wasn't in contact with the bike, therefore it didn't count as a finish. That rule really is in that book.
Mm-hmm.
It really does say that. I remember looking it up when Edwards and Hayden had that yep. run in at Assen, and we're like thinking, well, you know, the bike made it across the line or something.
Yeah, there's a really classic photograph from that. I know exactly what you mean, where he was as he was falling off the bike, and he was kind of hanging off the side, but the bike was perfectly upright.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, folks, go read the rules, and in fact, I will challenge our listeners to find something obscure in there and send us an email and or chat about it on the Facebook page. There's some really kind of twisted stuff in there. The fuel rules are just fascinating. If you're a you know petroleum engineer, you're probably going to go in there and completely geek out. So, but yeah, very very cool. You know the one thing that killed me this weekend?
Lack of internet. I don't know what.
Well, besides that, yeah, I've been having all sorts of troubles with the net. And in fact, Jules was nice enough to call me early today so that we get this call taken care of because my internet has been foobarred and the move is still not quite 100% done, but that will not stop me in the least from making it to Laguna Seca next week. Woohoo. No, you know what killed me this weekend?
What's that?
Was watching Eugene Laverty push his bike and shift the track.
That was painful.
That was bad. And I talked to, as I mentioned in the call with James, I talked to Mark Wittage afterwards, and he did mention to me that it was a big end and they were going to do some additional stripping down of the motor to find it out. But he did have a crash on Saturday. The bike ran on the side for a little bit. Stuff happens. But the problem is that Keenan...
he won the race.
he won the race, and... He was going to win that race one way or another. That was a great race to watch.
What a great finish, my God.
Yeah. And no doubt that Lascores was giving it his all. And Keenan wanted to win. He wanted to win at that very moment more than anybody else in that race. No doubt that the battle between Chaz Davis and Gino Rey, that was awesome. That was really fun to watch. Fujiwara being on pole just blew me away. You know, one lap is one lap, but he's still got a good finish. So that was one of, you know, it was one of the good races of the weekend. I heard the 600 Superstock race was also pretty good, but I haven't watched that up to this point. So we shall see. But I enjoyed the racing weekend. I'm starting to get into that mode because you and I are going to two races this year in the U.S. this year, and I'm like starting to become a little bit freaked out about putting together the logistics of it.
Yeah. And I'm also going to Brno, so.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're actually going to have
bam, bam, bam.
Yeah. You're going to have to come home and take a really long nap, aren't you?
I'm not going to. I realized the other day, like this is my last weekend, the one coming up, and I have actually some plans that I have to take care of stuff, and so I kind of missed on a chance to like energize before this totally crazy 2 months, like almost 2 months of craziness. So
yeah,
it's a good kind of craziness, you know. Once it's over, I'm probably going to be, you know, taking a vacation from vacation. So
well, and you're still working this week, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you are just kind of sort of nuts a little bit. Yeah, I would say so. Wow. So an awful lot going on and interesting stuff, and I'm certainly looking forward to next week. We'll do an early show next. Oh, you know, you had something that you
wanted. Yeah, before we go, so Gordon Howell from Pole Position Travel is, you know, he's been a friend of the show for many, many years, pretty much since the beginning. I think he was...
Sure.
You know, him and Bob collaborated very early on. He sent me an email saying that they actually have a couple of hospitality tickets left for Laguna Seca for the Pole Position Club. I don't know all the details. I was trying to get in touch with them today because I knew we were going to do the call early. And but if you email help@poleposition.com, or sorry, poleposition.travel.com, and we'll put this in the show notes.
Yeah.
Somebody will get you information on it. It's their events are really fun. They have, you know, parties and they raise money for Riders for Health and you know, serve lots of alcohol and stuff, so it's always
which odds are means that you might have the opportunity to see Jules and I if you go to. yeah, so
they really take care of people very well. You know, you get catered food and all that kind of good stuff. So they have a couple of tickets left. So if you guys just, you know, if you haven't made any plans yet, this is a very good way to go and just kind of, you know, be taken care of, everything, track and all that kind of good stuff. So
which is actually really great. Trying to pull this stuff all together on your own sometimes can be a bit of a nightmare, and there's no doubt that Pole Position actually puts together the perfect package so you really don't have to deal with anything except for enjoying the racing, having a good time, feeding your face, and getting home again.
And if it's a hot weekend, then you'd be so pleased that you get some shade. And
yeah, you're going to get fried at Laguna Seca, dude.
Yeah, it's okay. You
do it every year.
Yeah, my body's used to it.
I will too, I'm sure, no doubt. I'm kind of going by an unusual mode of transit, and as that comes together, I might even mention that next week. It's very kind of cool, and we'll see how that works out. And I think we've about covered things, have we not?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, by the time the show comes out again, we're going to see what the weather is like and at Saxon, Der Saxon Ring.
Der Saxon Ring.
And, man, you know, one last thing I'll say about the Rossi comeback. You know, because people have been saying, like, hey, you know, it's too early. So is Bruno. Like, if you really think about it, this the kind of break that he had. His leg was in two pieces. If you're not an insane racer, you'd be off that leg for 6 months, you know. So Bruno would be too soon as well, you know. So really, it's just a matter of does he have the endurance to be able to last the race? And if he thinks so, great. So let's have him. And I would love to have him at Laguna Seca. That'd be so damn cool.
It's the endurance and strength. But think about this also. Valentino can afford the absolute best money or best care that money can provide.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
That helps a little bit.
You're right.
Yeah.
Didn't he have that, like, what the hell is that chamber called, like, in his house?
The hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, he actually, I think, had it delivered to his house.
Yeah, and his leg was pinned with unobtainium. Anyway, yeah, I certainly would like to have that, but the bottom line is, yes, I would love to have him back. I don't want him to come back and get prematurely hurt, but I think he's smart enough not to do so. The rain does introduce a bit of a unknown factor, but I have a feeling that he is a bold enough guy to not let that deter him. And indeed,
In a way, it might actually be easier on him, right? Because then I don't know who it was. I think it was
a bit more of a smoother style that you have to have in the rain.
Yeah, no? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If it's off and on, that's way worse.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You get the surprise.
Let's not have that.
Yeah, you get the surprise in grip level. So we'll have to see. We'll really have to see. But I'm certainly looking forward to this week's racing. You know, it wasn't until we started to talk that I started thinking about Saxon Ring from last year. And I should remind myself every so often that before I talk about a race from that's coming up, that I should watch the race from the prior year.
You know what I do? I don't know if you remember Bob and I talking about this last year. Is I whip out an old, you know, PlayStation game and ride around the track before the race, so I get used to all the where all the fun stuff happens. And
sharp thinking.
Yeah, it's a cool track. I've always liked Saxon Ring. It has a weird reputation, but it always generates good racing. You know,
yep.
We had some fantastic races for 5 or 6 years in a row.
No doubt. There's a whole bunch of memories that I have of races that happened there, and just little bits and pieces. And so it'll be great, and it will be nice to have another weekend of racing amidst an incredibly hot, what is going to be hot weekend here, a freezing weekend down in the southern hemisphere, and hopefully a not-too-rainy weekend in Germany.
Right on.
Right on. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for downloading it. Once again, take a look at the Facebook page. What are we up to? 640 or something at this point. Very cool. A lot of activity. Feel free to use the donate tab if you'd like. Help me get to Laguna and bring you back some great coverage by Jules Beer if I get the opportunity to do so. I imagine that will probably happen. And meet you. We will definitely have meet and greets both at Laguna and Indy. And that's always fun. We love talking to you guys face-to-face, love talking to you through email. Send us emails through the contact form. We've been having a lot of fun with email this week. So that's it for me, Jules. If there's nothing for you, we can send these folks home or on to work as it is.
Right on. Okay, ciao.
Ciao yourself.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.
Wow.